Welcome to the Liberty Education Interview Series. Today we're going to be talking to Ned Ryan, founder and CEO of American Majority, a nonpartisan political training institute whose mission is to identify and mold the next wave of liberty-minded candidates, grassroots activists, and community leaders. Ned is a frequent guest on many national television shows, including Hannity, Special Report with Bret Baier, Your Role with Neil Cavuto, Fox and Friends, Tucker Carlson Tonight, and ABC's World News Tonight. Ned, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Good to be with you.
Given the lack of transparency, the refusal to let Republicans call witnesses, and the exclusion of President Trump's legal counsel from the so-called impeachment inquiry, do you think Republicans should even be acknowledging the Democrats' impeachment of President Trump, or they should at least vote to dismiss the whole thing? What do you see as the pros and cons of this?
You know, honestly, I've been pretty open about this and pretty blunt about it on, you know, Tucker and some of my opinion pieces. Democrats have set themselves a trap, and I think Republicans should take every advantage of it. I don't want to see a dismissal, actually. I think that they have dragged Donald Trump and the American people through 3 years of complete misery, working to destabilize the democracy. They've followed and pushed all these conspiracy theories, whether it's Russian collusion, Ukraine quid pro quo. I actually want to see witnesses. I don't want to vote for dismissal. I want this to be a painful, soul-sucking experience for them. They've been demanding it. Let's make it as painful as possible. Let's mess with the Democratic primary. Let's get these senators in the Senate. Let's get Joe Biden as a witness, Hunter Biden, et cetera. And I think Rand Paul has the right approach to this. And he said yesterday that if three or four of his Republican colleagues want to call witnesses, fine. We have to then make sure that Donald Trump gets to call every last witness that he wants to, including Hunter Biden, Eric Ciaramella, and everyone else. And so I'm of the opinion I'd like to see 6 weeks, make it as painful as possible, swear people in, put them under oath, put them on national television, and make this everything that it should be. Give Donald Trump his due process. I know that this is a complete farce, but at some point he deserves his day in court because he has been taken through the ringer. I mean, they have literally gone after him since he was a candidate, now obviously as president, and sought to undermine, and I have argued on TV, a soft coup attempt against him. Let's let the American people know what they've been up to and get these people, you know, on the spot getting cross-examined under oath, and let's see how they like that. And then my hope is after the trial and after he's exonerated, and I think he'll be exonerated with most, if not all, the Republicans, plus Joe Manchin and maybe another Democrat or two, we move on to the fall elections where I hope that House Democrats, especially those 30-some that are sitting in Trump districts, that the majority of them lose. Republicans take the majority back in the House, keep the Senate, and Donald Trump's off to a second term in which we make their lives even more miserable. So that's my hope.
And, you know, Ned, I've often thought if we're going to go in that direction, I think it would be real interesting if it was dragged out right into the election, because the Democrats are capable of anything, because I think it would be really kind of humorous to see a guy running for president who has been impeached, and this farce right. trial is going on, and then he gets elected overwhelmingly, and then I don't know the Democrats are beyond shame. I don't know what they would do or think at that point. But I don't think it's an impossibility that they will drag it out until the election, because they're not only corrupt, and I've made this case for years, and crazy, I think they're really stupid. And they're dumb enough to do that, because somehow they think if they just keep going one more try, somehow it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's clear that nobody gained this out on their side. Well, first of all, when you're expecting rational behavior from irrational people, you know, it's hard to understand what their thought process is. They're completely deranged. But if somebody had a little common sense and had the ability to step back a step or two and gamed it out, they would have realized, first of all, he's never going to be removed by the Senate. It's just simply mathematical impossibility with enough Republicans saying there's no way we're going to remove him based off these sinister pretenses. But going through the process and go, oh, my gosh, if we go down this path, are we prepared for the consequences of it in which maybe we get exposed and we get hammered and, you know, we get destroyed by this trial? Nobody's thought it out on their side. Which I think this is why I keep on telling Republicans, I don't want a dismissal vote. I don't want them to immediately dismiss it. I want them to the Democrats to bear the consequences for what they've done to the full extent.
Well, I think you're going to get your wish. Now, if you'll indulge me for a second, I want to go through my feelings on something here, and then I want to get your insights on what I say. The Trump impeachment and the Mueller investigation have at least one thing in common, and I've been saying this forever. They're both hoaxes created out of thin air, which is why it annoys me that Republicans like Romney and Murkowski and Collins always play right into the Democrats' hands with their naive attitude. And the Russian collusion hoax, it was, well, we have to let Robert Mueller finish his investigation. Now it's, well, we have to hear witnesses. Well, the problem with this kind of logic is that it means that anytime anyone makes a false accusation against a president, the implication is that everyone has to jump on board and help. What it actually does is encourage more sham investigations and sham impeachment. So I believe Alan Dershowitz hit the nail on the head with his, with the title of his new book, Guilt by Accusation. So people should keep in mind that an impeachment is nothing more than an accusation. It means absolutely nothing unless the accusation is proven, and that proof is up to the prosecutor, who in this case is the House. So my question is, why should Republicans cooperate in any way? It's just an accusation. They tried to do the same thing in the Kavanaugh hearing where Cory Booker kept saying, well, my gosh, he shouldn't be allowed to sit on the bench because there are too many accusations. Accusations mean nothing. How do you feel about this, Ned?
Well, there have to be consequences. I mean, we know that, that what the Democrats have been pushing again with collusion conspiracy theories, with this farce of an impeachment. I mean, we all know they've been wanting to do this from day one and try and remove Donald Trump from office. And people keep saying, well, we shouldn't indulge them and somehow give credibility or credence to any of this by actually saying we should have witnesses or trial. I think we should, because that's how we can make this a very painful consequence for what they've done. And my hope is that if it's done correctly, and again, that's a big question mark when you're talking about Republican senators, because they always are, you know, snatching victory, defeat from the jaws of victory. But it comes down to this. If we can make this as painful a process as possible with severe consequences, not only in regards to the people understanding what's taking place and Democrats plunging in approval leading into November and then obviously getting punished at the polls, my hope would be that it would be such a devastating result and consequences for them by us taking this seriously and say, okay, we're going to make you feel pain for this, that in the future people go, you know, look what happened to Democrats in 2020. This backfired on them spectacularly. They had huge losses at the polls in November of 2020. We shouldn't do this again. I mean, that's my hope. That's why I keep on saying there should be consequences, and part of the consequences are actually having all the witnesses, making this as painful as possible. So that's kind of my argument back, and we know this is spurious. We know that there's nothing there. Let's make them let's expose all of this to the American people and say, this is what you've been putting up with your propagandists in the mainstream media, with Democrats. This is what they've been trying to foist upon you. It's a joke, it's a hoax, it's a farce. They should be dismissed and not given power again for many, many years.
You know, I've actually come to like Lindsey Graham now that he's no longer tethered to John McCain, who in my opinion was a truly, truly despicable human being. But I have to say that I'm very disappointed in him since he became chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. What do you make of Graham's unwillingness to take action regarding the origins of the Russian collusion hoax, which he said he was going to do, the FISA abuses, and the Biden-Ukrainian corruption, not to mention the colossal lies that were told by a number of witnesses in the Kavanaugh hearings who are just apparently going to walk scot-free?
Well, I would say in regards to some of the Russian collusion, which we all know was based off the Steele dossier, which was put together by Fusion GPS, I think the reason Lindsey Graham doesn't want to dig too hard and look too closely at that is because, A, it implicates his old buddy John McCain. And quite frankly, I think it would implicate Lindsey himself. I mean, there's no reason he does not want to go too far down that path, because I think people will realize, hey, Lindsey Graham kind of flew a little too close to the sun there, and John McCain was eyeball deep in it, passing around the Steele dossier, as were McCain employees and staffers. And so I think that's one of the real reasons why Lindsey Graham doesn't want to be in. And by the way, just remind people, Lindsey Graham is stepping down, I believe, at the end of this year as Judiciary Chair, because he doesn't want to actually be chairman of the committee, because people have expectations, right? They have expectations that he will actually do some of the things that he said, and he doesn't want to. So he's going to be stepping down and handing back the chairmanship to Lindsey Graham, which is kind of staggering. Most people, most members of the House, most members of the Senate, they have been seeking to become chairman of a powerful committee like Judiciary, and for Lindsey Graham to walk away from it, I think that's something that needs to be actually discussed a little bit more. why would you walk away as the chairman of Judiciary? What are your reasons for doing that? And then it becomes a very uncomfortable conversation because I think Lindsey Graham doesn't want to have transparency. He doesn't want clarity because I think it would look really bad for him.
I firmly believe that once Trump is reelected, and I believe it will be in a landslide, and I believe the Republicans will take back the House and increase their numbers in the Senate. I agree with you that most of those 31 Democratic House members who were stupid enough to go along with Pelosi are going to be booted out of office. But I think, Ned, that the Democrats will not only not back off, but will actually ramp up their efforts to get Trump out of office because, quite frankly, I think they're psychopathic. I really do. And I'm curious to know how you think the Democrats will react after another humiliating defeat.
Well, I do think that Donald Trump, and again, there's no, we're like three lifetimes away from the November election, so you never want to say something's in the bag, but I remind people all the time that only five presidents running for re-election since 1900. The last 120 years, only five presidents running for re-election have lost their re-election bid. So you have historical trends, and then you have Moody's economic forecast saying it looks like Trump will win anywhere from 331 to 351 electoral votes. And I think he can win the popular vote as well. So I do think he will sail to re-election again with the economy. Nobody's looking and seeing a recession at all. It's going to be a strong economy coming into the fall. I mean, so it's one of those things where part of the problem is when we look at the Democrats and go, how can you be so stupid? How can you be so irrational? How can you be so deranged? They've put themselves in a very bad position in which they have fostered and encouraged the far left, you know, the Ilhan Omars and the Rashida Tlaibs and the AOCs of the world. And these are the far left that are demanding and putting pressure on. They're the small grassroots donors and the grassroots activists. They have been demanding this and pushing this, and they are really the power behind Democrats. And they're stuck between this rock and a hard place going, if we don't impeach Trump, we're going to get primary. AOC is going to primary him anyway, by the way, if you haven't been reading some of those reports in the last week or so. And what they've done, though, is it's almost like they're trying to win the battle to lose the war, because once they face the American people are going, you're insane. We didn't send you to Congress, especially these 30-some Democrats out of Trump districts. We didn't send you to Congress to then go impeach Trump on the thinnest of excuses. We actually sent you to go work on our behalf, and you haven't done that. It's just they've done it to themselves. They're irrational. And it's this, you see this socialism and this far left eating the Democratic Party from within. And I'm very blunt about this. It's very un-American. It's antithetical to our founding. And it's deeply irrational. And that's what we're confronting. And at some point, it's like, well, it's very hard to have a rational conversation with irrational people. So I guess we're just going to have to keep beating you at the ballot box until you actually have a come to Jesus moment as a Democratic Party and realize we better get our house in order. If we don't, the American people are going to reject this wholesale, which I'm hopeful that we can send them into the political wilderness in the fall, and I'm optimistic we will, but we'll have to see.
Well, I hope it works out as you think it might, but I've been warning people for a long time, if it isn't brought under control soon, a real live shooting civil war is a real possibility.
I'm
right
concerned.
In Virginia, yeah, where you live in Virginia, and I lived in Virginia for I think about 11 or 12 years, and I can tell you the people I knew in Virginia, especially down in the hills of Southwest Virginia, Blacksburg and all those places, I'm going to tell you something, my friend, they're not going to give up their guns at
no.
all, period.
No.
And that could lead to real violence.
I'm writing a piece that's running tomorrow at American Greatness, and I talk about this. I talk about the Virginia gun issue. Virginians are not handing over their guns. I have plenty of semi-automatic rifles from, you know, hunting rifles to semi-auto shotguns, all that, pistols, et cetera. No, you're not taking my guns. You're not going to. I don't give a rip what you think. And I make the point that when human laws are in defiance of natural law, those laws are not really laws. They're more an attempt to manipulate and oppress people. And I think that's what Northam, Blackface Northam, and Democrats are trying to do. They're trying to do things that are in defiance of natural law. And I think it, natural law in one of our most fundamental rights is self-defense. And what is one of the fundamental rights of self-defense? It's guns. And so I think it's going to end very badly for them. But, you know, you bring up an interesting point because I have these conversations all the time. Obviously, I debate a lot of people from the left on TV and in a variety of settings. We can't agree on how to define terms. It's like we're talking past each other. We have a different value set. At some point, society can't stand that tension. This is my concern. At what point, what is the point where we have a moment where it's the fever breaks and we have this moment and say, we can't do this anymore. We have to figure out how we can operate as Americans and understand that we can be an American people and have a difference of opinions. But it's almost as though the left is so deranged, they cannot stand any opposing opinion. I don't know how we get back to normal, but I do have fears that it's going to take something very unpleasant to get us back to normal.
Well, I'll tell you something. This Bernie Sanders nut job is talking about re-education camps. I got news
yes.
for you. I think the only way you're going to get the psychopaths on the radical left to change their ways is through they're the ones who need to go to re-education camps, because I don't see them changing at all. I mean, for any reason.
This is crazy. No, they're talking about re-education camps and gulags, and then say, hey, we want your guns. No. No, I'll keep my guns, and you come try and take them and send me to a re-education camp, see what happens.
You know, Ned, I think a lot of people have come to accept the reality that we have a two-tier justice system, to put it mildly.
We do.
And they're skeptical that politicians and bureaucrats will ever be punished for their wrongdoings. And the most obvious lawbreakers, I'm talking about people like Comey and Brennan, Clapper, McCabe, they've yet to be indicted or prosecuted. This thing with McCabe has been hanging out there for a couple of years now. It's ridiculous. Do you find that a lot of people you deal with are skeptical that any of these lawbreakers will ever actually be prosecuted, let alone convicted and put in jail? And if so, what do you say to them?
I do. No, and I also, at some point, a republic cannot continue if there's a bifurcated legal system. And I say one of the fundamental premises of a republic is equal application of the law, right? The founders decided in divine, you know, the age of the divine right of kings, where the king was law, they were going to say the law is king. And all stand equal before the law, regardless of position, regardless of last name. And now we've gotten to this situation where, well, if you have the right last name or you're in the right institution, you're fine. The law is more a series of suggestions. If you have the wrong political connections or the wrong last name, well, we're going to throw the book at you. The American people aren't stupid. They're watching this going, either somebody broke the law or they didn't break the law. If they broke the law, why aren't they being prosecuted? Why aren't they being thrown in jail? And so, no, there is real angst with a lot of people I talk to saying, we don't believe, we don't trust our institutions, we don't trust our legal system. It seems very bifurcated. My hope is, and I'm holding out hope, that Bill Barr and John Durham are actually going to bring some semblance of justice, because I remind people, these people, Clapper, Brennan, Comey, McCabe, et cetera, they massively abused the surveillance state. They massively abused our law enforcement regime. And ultimately, at the end of the day, those two things are based on one word, trust. And the only way you get trust back is for there to be consequences. And if there aren't consequences, I tell people, if people think they can get away with what they've done over the last 3, 4, 5 years and there are no consequences, what comes next? That is my real concern. First of all, people lose faith in institutions. But it can get worse, people. If there are no consequences, the next iteration could be even worse. And that's a real problem.
It's not just Trump thereafter. I believe that the macro objective of Democrats is to assure the outcome of every election by simply creating new voters, by giving 16-year-olds and illegal aliens a right to vote, and also getting rid of the Electoral College. And Rush Limbaugh has even talked about the Democrats' desire to get rid of elections altogether, and I agree with him. What's your take on this?
I mean, I've said as much on Tucker, in which I said I think many of the people in D.C., Democrats, administrative state players, deep state actors, whatever you want to call them, they find democracy deeply inconvenient because they think – I mean, there really is this mindset. I've been in the D.C. area for about 20 years, in which elections come and go and these administrative state actors stay, and they pretty much tell political appointees that. Right. They look at them and go, well, I'm not going to implement those policies because you're going to be gone in a year or two and I will be around 10, 15 years from now. And so for them, elections are kind of this really kind of quaint notion, you know, a date on a calendar, but it doesn't change their behavior, doesn't change how they're going to operate. And I think that's really what we've been experiencing the last 3 years. If Donald Trump showed up, said, I'm the duly elected president of the United States, by the means laid out by the Constitution, by the will of the American people, I'm the one that decides what policy is inside the executive branch, both foreign and domestic. And these administrative state actors said, we don't think so. We think we're the ones that decide. Donald Trump said, no, the people sent me as their representative to actually implement the vision that they elected me to implement. And the administrative state actors said, no, we don't think so. And honestly, for the last however many decades, administrative state actors have been given so much leeway by Congress, by the executive branch, it's almost as though they're justified in that, because I think Congress and I think many in the executive branch have failed us. And so that's what this is about. I tell people, if you really want to know what the last 3 years have been about and you sum it up into one sentence, it's about who decides. And at some point we have to say, unelected, powerful bureaucrats do not decide. It's the elected representatives of the American people. That's what we're dealing with right now, and that's why Donald Trump has to succeed to give us a chance to get back on the path to a constitutional republic.
Two last questions, Ned. You know, when Mark Zaid, the whistleblower, non-whistleblower's attorney, was outed for things he said early on about a coup against Donald Trump, as you'll recall, he quickly tweeted out, "Oh, I was referring to a legal coup," quote unquote. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Peter Strzok, when he was confronted with his infamous text in which he said, "Don't worry, we'll stop him." He just tried to pass it off lightly by saying he was referring to Americans stopping Trump. The great Adam Schiff, say, after he was confronted with making up Trump's conversation, which was outrageous, with Ukrainian President Zelensky, he quickly backtracked and said, "Oh, it was just a parody." And really, what the hell does that mean? Do you have any hope that Durham and Barr are going to be committed to not letting these people get away with their crimes simply by making light of them? Or they just pass them off as nothing more than innocent mistakes? That's Comey's...
I have hope, and the reason I have hope is because obviously John Durham's investigation started as an investigation. Now it's a criminal investigation. You know, grand juries have been impaneled now for probably several months. And I think Bill Barr's motivation is to set things right. I think he believes that the DOJ and the FBI have been highly politicized. I think he really wants to set things right. And for that to happen, there have to be consequences. I have to tell you this. I mean, one of the things that has to be done, and it's going to have to be Bill Barr recommending it, Chris Wray has to go at the FBI, right? He's not the guy that's there. He's not the right guy to actually reform the FBI. So I have hope. And I have hope because I've seen enough from Bill Barr and John Durham to understand they're very serious about what has taken place. And it is a criminal investigation. And my hope is that some of these people do actually have to serve jail time. They have their security clearances permanently revoked, and that there are severe consequences, so that next time somebody gets this brilliant idea, and I say that with the deepest of sarcasm, they won't do it because they realize there will be severe consequences for it.
I couldn't agree more, and we're all waiting with bated breath to see what happens. Well, let's close out, Ned, on getting your take on the Democrats' 2020 presidential field. Do you see – I know it brings laughter right away, of course, but do you see anyone in the Democratic primaries who you think would have a chance of beating President Trump, including Mike Bloomberg? That's the big question mark to me.
You know, it's a collection of political pygmies and creepy, sleepy Uncle Joe. And the only reason that Uncle Joe is still in the lead is because the other candidates are so bad. I mean, Joe Biden is an utter mediocrity. And the fact that he is still leading or is neck and neck in the polls shows you how bad the other candidates are. I don't see anybody. And you know, Van Jones and other people on CNN admitted the other night after the last Democratic debate, they saw nobody on the stage who could take out Donald Trump. First of all, power of incumbency, all the things that are going well, strong economy, and then really just these utter mediocrities that are running for the Democratic nomination. I don't see any of them beating Donald Trump. I don't see it really being close. I mean, Joe Biden is hardly going to motivate anybody, and Bernie Sanders, while he has a very motivated base, I think will terrify a lot of the American people outside of, you know, the D.C., New York, Acela corridor, in which they realize, oh my gosh, this guy's not just a socialist. He believes in coercive socialism, and there's another term for that, it's called communism. And they would just, I would hope, wholesale reject by double digits, you know, a Bernie Sanders type. So I look at it and I realize all the trends, economically, historical, are in Donald Trump's favor. He has a very weak field he's running against. I have a very hard time that anybody's going to beat him, much less make it a close race. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm proud to say I was on the record with an article as far back as early last February, almost a year ago, where I said, and I listed all the candidates, and I said not one of them is a serious candidate, including Joe Biden. And the only one other person I heard say that on television was Tucker from day one. I've said the same thing. While the fake news is saying, oh, he's the leading candidate and all that, I was saying from the beginning, he's not a serious candidate. When all the stuff comes out about his beloved son and his corruption, I picture him being in tears and giving a speech where he's dropping out. We've seen this before, by the way, John Edwards and others, for the good of his family and for the good of the country, he's going to step out. He never was a serious candidate, and that's why I think, I don't know, it could be Bloomberg by default, unless they're dumb enough to let Hillary or Michelle Obama run, in which case people like you and I will have a field day. It'll be great, great entertainment. I'd love to see it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I think Trump's going to sail to victory, but we'll see.
Ned, terrific interview. I really appreciate the way you lay everything out in a way that's so logical and easy for everyone to understand. And I want to thank you for joining us today, and I wish you continued success with all the great work you do with your American Majority organization.
I appreciate it. Great to be with you today.